The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hi, I'm Danny Roth, and this is Everyday Horror Presents The 13 Days of Halloween, where Sci-Fi Wire has some frightening, funny, and occasionally even insightful conversations about horror movies for the 13 days leading up to Halloween. It's like the 12 days of Christmas, but better. Zombies as horror have existed for a long time. They were standardized in 1968 by George Romero and John Russo with Night of the Living Dead, and even though zombie movies have been steadily released in some form or other since 1968, by the mid-90s and early 2000s, they had ceased to be mainstream. However, with 9/11 creating a worldwide panic, zombies were poised to once again ask the questions they ask best. What is humanity without its civilization? What are we down to our basest instincts? And is there anything we won't do when we're backed into a corner? Danny Boyle and Alex Garland took every classic zombie trope and made it new with their 2002 film, 28 Days Later. I spoke with film critic Bob Chipman and music critic Todd Nathanson about 28 Days Later, what makes Cillian Murphy an unlikely hero, the incredible performances of Naomi Harris and Christopher Eccleston, and why it is that the military is almost always evil in zombie movies. All right, so 28 Days Later, 2002's zombie film, the running zombie movie. The
Rage zombie movie.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I guess Return of the Living Dead is the first running, but this is the one that people usually think of when they think of the runners. So this movie that came out in 2002, 1 year after the world was changed, was then changed again by a zombie apocalypse, kind of. My question is this: when you think of this movie, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? Bob, why don't we start with you?
There are few moments with or few films or, you know, bits of popular culture that like stick out in like retrospect when you go back and you remember, okay, this is a point where there was just some new turn to the aesthetic that suddenly everything. And you knew watching it, everything's going to look different after this. Like watching even just the trailers for like The Matrix, you knew, fight scenes are going to look different now. This is going to be a new thing. And like this one, it wasn't just the running zombies. It was the droning atonal the electronic music in the background. I know nothing about music terminology, so I will make Todd cringe, and I apologize. I know nothing about actual music terminology or sonic terminology.
I was rewatching this movie for the first time in a billion years, and I would have sworn that it was a Radiohead song that they put in there. And I was, as it turns out, completely wrong. I was looking at it, I was like, what is the name of that Radiohead song? I think it was off of Kid A or something, and it's a different band entirely. It's Godspeed You Black Emperor.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess I was thinking, because it has that big scene of empty London, and I was reminded of the empty New York in Vanilla Sky, which I think did have a Radiohead.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
You figured it out. You've diagnosed your own mental illness. Good work.
My head is full of stupid trivia. But that was I think that score is like the best thing about this movie. It is so intense, and it gives you like a strong feeling of just how crazy this, you know, the zombie apocalypse is. Like this is a movie where you really genuinely feel the bleakness and the power of the end of the world. Like some of these zombie movies, you know, it doesn't really feel like an apocalypse. Mm. Like World War Z didn't even feel like an apocalypse, and that was called World War Z.
Yeah,
that this was a really intense one.
Yeah, I feel like you can kind of see the DNA. The only Romero movie that really has this vibe is the third one, at least at that point. I mean, I guess
Day?
Day of the Dead has this, but that's, you know, it also involves the military. In fact, I don't know how it is that I wasn't thinking about this until just now.
That's right.
That this is sort of Danny Boyle's take on Day of the Dead, because it's dealing with the military and such, but in a very different way and in a very different time. I think it's interesting that you brought up the weird resentful feeling, because I felt it too. I remember also them saying, "Oh, they're reinventing the zombie movie." And the nice thing is that it's been a while since these movies came out, since the original, certainly. And zombie movies carried on.
Some movies
are influenced by it, and some zombie movies are not influenced by it. So in point of fact, I feel like that wound has healed for me. The resentment I felt has since gone away.
It went away for me pretty much the minute I watched the movie, because there was because it turned out to be such a different thing, that like the sequel is much more of a conventional zombie movie than the first one is. I don't dislike the sequel. I think, I'm sure we'll get to this, but like the sequel is much more of the traditional, you know, okay, the monsters are outside, we're inside, we're trying to get from one place to another. The first one is a lot more of, you know, this is a thing that happened, but also it, like, the title is being honest, like the zombie thing already the zombie movie happened off screen while Killing Murphy is knocked out, and then he wakes up and is like, okay, this already happened, we've kind of dealt with it, and now it's like the bad stuff is the other stuff they run into when they get to the militia fortress is the real danger of it, and that's a different kind of thing. So it's really all about how much tension they can wring out of people being in stuck spaces with other people they can't trust, you know, with this sort of, you know, gradually intensifying John Murphy music, which might actually be the most influential thing, even outside the visuals, about this movie. It is, you know, how many movies grabbed on to both, John Murphy's two tracks from this. This one is In the House, and Sunshine is Adiago in D minor, right? Adagio and G-minor in D minor, like, are the two, you know, very confused, because they're, I know, like, musically they're very different, but like people will say that they're similar tracks of these sort of, you know, one tone underneath and then a gradually building beat on top of. I can't remember any movie or before this using action, and it seems like such a simple action to sound beat of, okay, just have someone trying to get from one place to another very difficultly and just run an electronic track of a rising drum beat of trying to get to there with a synchronized rising, tone behind it. And something about Killing Murphy is no one's idea of an action hero, but like it kind of pushes him over it into this, and all he's trying to do is push down a door and knock one guy out, and it works.
It's a funny thing. Back when this was like the star maker for like all these people, right?
Yeah,
like Cillian. Is it Killian or Cillian?
I've heard it said Killian. It might be Cillian because he doesn't have the K there.
I apologize, Mr. Murphy, if I got your name wrong. But Naomi Harris, that was hers too. And
And
I was real shocked when the militia leader shows up and it's Christopher Eccleston.
Mm.
Like,
yeah,
that was pre-Doctor Who, right?
It was by a couple of years. You know what I was thinking about too? It is very big for the actors. But so Danny Boyle made a real particular choice with this movie. When you look up the Blu-ray review of this,
wow,
they're like, well, it looks like shit on purpose.
Yeah.
There's no way that this is ever going to look any better. You could put this on 4K. It's not going to make a lick of difference. You know, no HDR is going to improve the look of this film. And you know what's interesting is that he was not the only person to do stuff kind of like that. It makes me think of two things. One, it makes me think of found footage era stuff, you know, Blair Witch and stuff like that, where it intentionally looks bad. But it also makes me think about Spielberg, who also in 2002 put out Minority Report.
Yeah.
And he also did that where he was doing stuff to the film, the physical film, to make it look
grainier and
grimier. Yeah, grainier and grimier, so that there's literally, you couldn't, you know, you could never go back and really make that look cleaner than it is, because he's actually physically and purposefully damaged the physical film materials. Yeah. So this is sort of like an interesting 2000s era thing that was happening.
Yeah, it was a real weird to watch it on Blu-ray, because like,
because it still looks like crap on purpose.
But it feels like you are getting every giant pixel in like gleaming, beautiful, gigantic size.
Yeah.
Like that grains are beautiful and gigantic.
Yeah, I think that H Bomber Guy video, the Scanlines, the first one he did about how there are certain movies that it's better to watch it on a crappy VHS and a little CRT monitor.
Yeah.
I think 28 Days Later is that movie.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, we had a pretty decent TV growing up, and I watched this on HBO the first time I saw it, and you back in like 2003 or something. And I don't remember being like this weirded out by the grains on that film. It looks weird in Blu-ray.
But I kind of, in hindsight, as weird as it is, and the sequel doesn't do this, but I have to respect the game, because he made a choice. The goal was, and I think that he was probably more influenced by the early days found footage, because the idea is to make it feel plausible, to make it feel like you're there. You know, I think it puts you in the driver's seat in a way that maybe if it had been shot a different way, it might not have come through. It's a choice. I think it ultimately holds up, but I wouldn't want it to happen all the time.
You know, it feels like a grindhouse movie, like what a modern grindhouse movie would be. Like if they had had these kinds of cameras back in the 70s, this is what your crappy B-movies that you saw at the drive-in would look like. You know, we'd say like he made a decision and, you know, to make it look like this. I feel like part of that decision was budget, because there is not a lot of money put into this, is what I understood.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't expecting this to be anything, I guess. And I'm trying to remember what Danny Boyle's career was like at that point. This was, you know, before Slumdog Millionaire, and he had the Oscar and everything. He had made Trainspotting in 96, and that was... And then he got his... I want to say it was The Beach, his big budget debut, The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio, and that, like, flushed down the toilet.
Yeah, he'd had two... pretty much bombs between Trainspotting and this. He'd had A Life Less Ordinary and The
Jesus.
Beach. Yeah. So like he was coming back from the downswing on this one.
It's kind of weird thinking about this also from the writing perspective. This was back in the days when he was working with Alex Garland on The Reg.
Alex Garland, the Ex Machina guy? The Annihilation guy?
Yes.
Wow.
So 28 Days Later and The Beach, both written by Alex Garland.
Wow, yeah. I did not know that about Alex Garland. Wow.
And he wrote Sunshine, which is also Danny Boyle, right? I'm not making that
what
one
an
up.
Uneven career this director has had.
Mm.
Yeah, but yeah, like this is, and I think that really comes through. It's interesting to think about 28 Days Later now that Alex Garland has put out Ex Machina, and I think perhaps much more aptly, Annihilation, which is maybe one of the best movies of the 2010s, period. Like, not even, like, genre, sci-fi horror aside, I think it might just be one of the best, period.
Wow, that's a big influence this movie has had. Actually, like, the 2000s was the zombie decade, really, like the zombie craze. Like, and there were like tons of zombies movies after this. Was there one before this? Because I don't remember. Like, was this the kickstart of like the zombie craze?
When did the Dawn of the Dead remake come out?
2004.
Okay, thank you for having that answer immediately at the ready.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead that same year.
Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe this is the thing that kind of kicked it off.
World War Z, the book, had come out yet, or the Zombie Survival Guide. I think 28 Days Later is this, and it feels like after 9/11, we were in a bleak time. We were bleak and unhappy.
You don't say.
Yeah, and I don't know. I was not really a horror guy before that, but I just remember like, and apparently everybody, because we just wanted to see like something really dark and bloody on screen, and like we didn't have like these gore fests during the Obama era like at all. Tell me we did. We moved on to ghost stories after that. We moved on to Paranormal Activity and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was James Wan City.
Yeah, it was a bit. It was a bit. It was I remember the zombie thing. The timeline on the zombie stuff is strange because depending on like how far underground you go with like the horror thing, because like the extreme gore thing and especially the zombie thing never goes away for the devoted hardcore like horror scene guys. But that's in like the direct to video scene. It's in the the foreign scene. What we would call like the immediate pre 9/11 era was spectacularly gory overseas in Hong Kong, in Japan, Italy, South America, etc. And you know the zombie thing that happened for us grows out of like the Dawn of the Dead coming back grows out of the Resident Evil movie being this ridiculously unexpected box office hit, which
is that
comes
2000.
The Resident Evil movie is I believe
2002.
Yeah, 2002, and then and then Dawn of the Dead shows up is already planned, but they're coming back on that.
Yeah, and then you get like there's just a ton of stuff. Then they did Land of the Dead, which was the fourth of the Romero. That was 2005.
Mm-hmm.
There's Shaun of the Dead. There's what else is in there? There's like a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah, Wreck, which was a Spanish zombie movie.
Yeah, and the
I Am Legend, if you want to count it.
Yeah, and you also, and this is also when you had the vampire thing happening at exactly the same time, and they kind of get used, especially in a lot of them interchangeably, like I Am Legend treats the monsters like zombies. In the book I Am Legend, they're literal vampires, with a scientific explanation, but they still have garlic and steaks and all of that. In the Omega Man, which was the first version of that, they behave more like zombies, but they're intelligent and have like a cult thing happening. That's a very silly film, but
it really is.
Yeah. Neither of the movies really get the point of that story anyway, but like even the Vincent Price one doesn't quite get there. The zombie and vampire thing, when it happened, especially post 9/11 at the time. And I don't know that I've thought that much about it since then. At the time, I remember the cynical take being that zombies were the safest, in a way, the safest possible monster because they were everything but also nothing. Because it's just, oh, they're people and they can be any people, but they're just, you know, mean, snarly, dead people who are already dead. So these can represent any evil, scary mass of humanity that you might be afraid of and can be demonized, but you're not really projecting anything onto anyone. So this is not really the scary foreign terrorist horde. It's zombies. This isn't really the evil alt-right or hinterland hillbillies or whatnot. It's zombies.
Zombies are easy to project onto, like whatever you're scared of.
This is the avaricious rich. It's the scary poors. It's whoever they are. It seems like we're just kind of the scariest thing to anyone is everyone else, and here's everyone else.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I was amazed at how bleak 28 Days Later is, like more than even most zombie movies. Like, because they go immediately. Like, there's no hiding the bites in 28 Days Later until everything goes down. Like, everything goes bad immediately. Like, there's no fighting it off. There's no, you know, you can't fuck around.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I feel as though one of the biggest scenes of that whole movie for me is right when the military shows up, because that poor, poor dad who just thought maybe finally he was going to get his daughter to safety, maybe there would be some normalcy, and he gets so upset that he infects him damn self, and it just, and then he gets blown away, is just miserable. But I mean, you know, if we're going to talk about, you know, what the hidden meanings are of this film, and not that they're terribly hidden, but
yeah, Brendan Gleeson is like the only likable character. I mean, the other survivors, you know, they're fine enough, but you don't really like them like you do Brendan Gleeson's. He's like a friendly guy, loves his daughter and all that.
It's just so destructive, because that's the thing. The guy who's hanging on, the Santa Claus in the apocalypse, in the wasteland, eventually turns evil. It could happen to goddamn anybody. And that, you know, I mean, that reflects the times, right? That's it. It came out in 2002. You talk about 9/11. You talk about how it ultimately we lived in a time where it was so easy for the anxiety to take over your life and make you not really you anymore.
Yeah. I just remember that dread. Like, we were just, like, it felt like the end of the world. And that's why we kept getting all these apocalypse movies right after that.
And in Running Zombies makes sense because, you know, it all happened at once, right? It was a fast goddamn change. You know, we were one way one day, and then the next day,
yeah,
it was over. I think in that way, Running Zombies make a hell of a lot more sense in the 2000s than the Shamblers do.
Yeah, the Romero zombies would not have destroyed the island of Great Britain in 28 days.
No.
Like, it would have taken them a bit. Maybe 2 months, 3 months, not one.
Yeah, like, but it happens lightning fast for a reason. But yeah, so, boy, if we're going to talk about what the movie's really about, we're going to have to talk about the military.
Oh, boy.
Gosh. And it's, I mean, arguably the most horrific part is that. I mean, it's all terrible. It's all just absolutely galling to watch. Well made though it is, but once you get there, once you arrive with those military guys that are just trying to survive, and they know how to function in certain regards, right? Like, I'm sure they're used to combat. I'm sure they're used to being in things, but that stuff with Christopher Eccleston, where he's like, "I promise them women," shit. What the hell?
You know, Lindsay, our mutual friend, she did not like 28 Days Later specifically for that reason. And, you know, there, like, every good apocalypse movie has to have a rape gang in it somewhere. It does get a little overdone. Like, I'm not sure I agree with her, but I see where she's coming from. I mean, it's been literally 28 days. They kind of jumped to transform into a rape gang kind of fast. And as we know from the sequel, it didn't make it off the island either. So, like, just across the channel, people are eating breakfast. Like, like I said, things moved real quickly in this apocalypse.
But that's the thing. That's the whole point, I think, is that it didn't matter that the rest of the world was okay.
Well, they don't know that. Like, at the beginning, they say they'd heard New York and Paris were also having outbreaks, and then that's all they heard. So they have every reason to believe that the world is gone.
But that's it. I mean, again, you know, I mean, this is a British film, but as an American audience, right, we're going to look at it and say, well, we became so insulated that I think that there was a lack of awareness that the rest of the world was carrying on. And so I think the military and this represent that to a degree. And also they, you know, I mean, there's just, I think we all have an anxiety of what it means to be a soldier and the result of being in battle and the post-traumatic stress that comes with. And also the way in which you get used to listening to your officer, the guy who's like running everything.
He's telling me he'll never bake bread, plant crops, raise livestock. He's telling me he's futureless.
Mm-hmm. If he says this is what we're doing, and, you know, the other element of what Chris Eccleston is doing in this film is that he's torturing one of the infected,
Right. Wasn't it one of theirs, right?
Yeah, he was a soldier that they knew, and he's like, well, you know, he's teaching me a lot. He's teaching me that he's never going to be normal. He's never gonna farm. You know, he's never gonna go to the internet cafe and look up porn. He's just gonna kill and kill and kill. And eventually, what I'm gonna learn from him is how long it takes for him to starve to death. Which is, again, you know, and it's sort of the military response to the opposition around that time in real life, is that we kind of looked at things and we're like, these guys are zealots. Look what they did. You can't reason with them. And I think that that's, you know, to a degree, that's kind of what they're saying, is that they, you know, they've come up with this easy euphemism, right? He's infected. There's nothing we can do, and therefore we can do whatever the hell we want.
Well, and it's also kind of a quintessential zombie movie thing. It's not like if you've, and I think this was part of the function of it, is that even with like the Resident Evil movies being out, which are more like alien movies where the aliens are zombies, you know, like they don't share a lot of, like they visually borrow a lot of tropes from like the Romero things. But this was the first time that like mainstream, you know, blockbuster movie audiences had gone to see something that more or less resembled an old fashioned zombie movie. But like, if you watch even like bad Romero knockoff zombie movies like leading up to this, as if you're like a horror movie person going into this, you know, you do not want them to find soldiers, because the soldiers are always bad guys, and he's always promised them women, and they've always immediately reverted into a post-apocalyptic Mad Max gang as soon as they can, because that's the genre and it's one of the things that happens. So it goes in with the material. So it's part of the vibe, as far as I'm concerned, to that. I think that the, you know, in general, and I think it's something that really, I'd like to say that I was, you know, as cognizant as I am now.
Wouldn't we all?
Yeah, like out, like, you know, even not that long ago as this movie is. Now, as I was as a younger guy, you know, just a genre, you know, more unquestioning genre movie trope guy watching it then. But, you know, at the time, you know, no, I was not as much. So at the time, didn't think quite as much of it. It's like, well, yeah, of course, there's, you know, the genre has a rape as plot device problem. And, you know, the good movies in it are generally not exempt. So, like, I can't deny that. I don't know. I don't necessarily object to it. I think it fits.
No, I don't object to it either. It's just, yeah, like, as a whole, like, that's one of the things where you zoom out. Like,
yeah, and, yeah. There's the larger issue, like you said, Bob, of it being there all the time.
Could it exist without it? Yeah, it could.
I'll tell you something, though. I think the forgive sounds terrible, but the reason why I think it ultimately works for me within the narrative is because they cast Christopher Eccleston, who, even though he was not a well-known actor in the States yet, is incredibly good in this.
Yeah.
I think that there's a certain charisma to him combined with a cold calculation,
mm-hmm,
that makes him sinister, but you kind of get it.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that that's chilling, and I think that in the hands of a lesser actor, I probably would view this part of the film differently. But because they cast such a talented person in that role, I think ultimately it works. You know, I mean, if you're uncomfortable with it, if you don't like it, that's, you know, I mean, I'm not here to tell anybody they've got to watch 28 Days Later. But the reason I think ultimately I look at it and I say, yeah, all right, I think it really boils down to the acting and the writing also.
Yeah, like today, you watch it, like everything that's, you know, like tropey about the movie, which is like a fair number of things, even at the time, you know, when they like the thing that annoyed me about it ultimately became something that I liked about when they said, you know, Danny Boyle reinvents zombie horror. You know, when I saw it, and I was, okay, wow, they really are hitting every single zombie movie thing in this. It felt deliberately like, okay, this is the now cutting edge, this movie version of thing you've seen in a million zombie movies. Like there's literally nothing in this plot beat wise that you've not seen in a million other of these movies. You know, the one infected thing that they've captured that gets loose and used as a weaponized thing by good guys. The reason that this happens is because someone did something stupid in a science lab, and it's animal rights guys. The bad military guys show up, and there's even like every single one of these is a repeating trope that you've seen in. God, I really hate using that word instead of cliche, but like at this point, both trope and cliche are tropes and cliches. But to me, this is a 28 Days Later, like kind of represented a very deliberate, you know, here are a million old, you know, tired, worn out things in a genre no one takes seriously anymore. We're going to make you take them seriously again. And in that regard, it's probably one of the most successful versions of that ever, because we had a solid decade of this whole genre being both back and the biggest thing in the horror genre for a while. Yes. So in that respect, it was a monster success.
Not least of which is because a few months after this movie came out in the United States, Walking Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
The comic book,
had the same premise. And on that note, here's my question to you to wrap this all up in a bow. Hypothetically, let's say something happens to you. You wind up in a coma. You wake up and you're in the hospital and nobody's around because the zombie apocalypse has maybe kind of happened. At least in your town it has. And there's really no indication. There's no Twitter. You can't check. You hate Twitter. You're a Luddite. I don't know. Whatever. And it's running zombies. You're in this. You're in Cillian Murphy's circumstance. What would you do? And do you think you're gonna make it? That's my question. Tell the truth.
I die immediately. Like not even by zombies. Let's be real. Like,
oh really? What, are you just gonna like trip on your own feet?
Yeah, down the stairs, break my neck. Like the second I don't have my phone on me, I'm useless. I have no skills.
My prediction is that you will, even if it's really cold out, go out in sandals, and then you'll trip and stub a toe, and then the toe will bleed a little bit, and then some of the zombie blood will get in your toe, and you'll become a zombie. That's what's going to happen to you.
That sounds right. Man,
wear sandals too much, Todd. That's what I'm saying. What's with the sandals, man?
I tell you what, I don't even make it out of that bed. How would I make it 28 days? How did he make it 28 days? No, I give myself no credit to being a survivor in the zombie apocalypse.
So there's nobody from that movie you look at and you go, I relate to that person. That person's like me. Nobody.
Maybe a zombie. I don't know.
All right, there you go. So Zombie Todd is already on the loose. Now, Bob, you're awake.
Now hold on. Am I in the hospital in my city where I am right now, or am I in London where he was?
Dealer, I kind of want to say that you'd be in a city that you're familiar with. Let's put it that way. Like I think, like, you know, I don't know if you have as big a city. Let's say hypothetically it's London, but this is a version of you that knows London. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Put you on like an equal playing field.
Okay, so, well, in London, there's, even if I'm as close to my house as I would be, because I'm literally right the hell around the corner from the nearest hospital to me. So, like, it would be like a 20-minute walk to just go to my house, get my gun, and go back to the hospital. So if I'm in London, I'm staying right the goddamn hell at the hospital, because that's, like, the best, if he... Now, he doesn't already know he's in a zombie apocalypse, granted, but if he somehow did, just stay at the goddamn hospital. Like, that's why he's alive still.
Supplies?
Yeah, there's...
Food might be a problem, though.
You can forage for food. There's a hospital... In any situation like that, a hospital has medical supplies. It has to have its own, separate from the rest of the city, power grid supply to keep the machines on if there's a brownout or a blackout that's usually in the basement that's fuel powered. It has usually totally separate landlines and power lines. It has a separate water supply. It has like separate stored medical supplies. It has doors that lock manually and electronically from both sides because it's a hospital. Bulletproof glass everywhere. Probably security doors and closets. Probably weapons supplies from when there are police there. Like, a hospital is a goddamn fortress if you know how to use it. So he never should have left the goddamn hospital.
Well, see, here's the thing. In most zombie movies, the hospital is a terrible place to go because the hospital has the morgue, and it is like the prime point for infection. You take people who are infected to the hospital, and then they infect others as they go, as they die, or they do that. But in a rage zombie apocalypse, that things move too fast, and no one would take them to the hospital. So in that case, absolutely, a hospital is your best case scenario, now that I think about it.
I'm completely convinced that Bob's surviving this thing. I wasn't sure. I thought for sure we would all be definitely dead.
Yeah.
But now that you say that, Bob, I can't even lie. I'm impressed. That was pretty goddamn astute.
Do you have the zombie survival guide also?
That's our show. We made it to the end, unenraged by monkey blood, thanks in no small part to Bob's brilliant hospital plan. Tweet us at Sci-Fi Wire with your zombie survival tips. And while you're there, you can find Bob Chipman at The Movie Bob, Todd Nathanson at Shadow Todd, and me, your host, Danny Roth at Danny Ordinary. Our theme song was composed by Thomas William Dyer II. Thank you for listening, and remember, sometimes the best way to deal with the horrors of every day is with a little everyday horror. See you tomorrow.